Hey, this is Sandy.
And Randy.
And we're here on AT Corner.
Being an athlete trainer comes with ups and downs, and we're here to showcase it all.
Join us as we share our world in sports medicine.
Welcome back to another episode of AT Corner. For this week's story episode, I think we have a very fitting way to end National Athletic Training Month.
That's what I was going to say.
Ooh, I see we're on the same wavelength. Yes, we are going to be talking about
transition to practice, something that every athletic trainer has to do.
You know what? That's true. Everybody has went through that weird transition phase.
But the crazy thing is, because the profession has changed over the years, obviously some people are going to go transition from a master's program, which is obviously recent, most recent. Some people are going to transition from a bachelor's program like you did, Randy. And some people are, as they would say, not so much of a transition from the internship route.
Yeah, that's true. Ooh, what a spectrum.
I wish I would have put in something on the questions of kind of like if people kind of had a thought of the different transitions and how they were different.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But I guess you don't really know. I mean, I think that we kind of have, you and I kind of have a little backstage pass because you did the bachelor's transition, I did the master's transition.
Yeah.
So I feel like we have a little bit.
I mean, I feel like it's pretty close. I feel like our transitions are fairly similar-ish.
No.
As far as like being an AT. Because like when you come out, like I feel like the content that we learned was very similar. So it's not like, I don't know. That was my perspective kind of seeing it. I mean, granted, I had the benefit of, okay, being a bachelor's, like it was easier for me to gain experience because of like, oh, the grad assistantship was still possible.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. You had 2 years of a grad assistantship and I was thrown to the wolves.
But I mean, from like a clinical standpoint, like the actual
I'm talking about actual transition. What is going on?
Yeah, I feel for the master students coming out now because when I make it sound like it was so long ago, but like when I, you know, became certified and entered the workforce, we still had the grad assistantship route, and that was a great way to pay for your master's. I mean, granted, there were some places, like I was very lucky at where I did my GA ship, like they did a great job of taking care of us. So like we were pretty capped on like, hey, 20 hours. And if your team was practicing late at night, but you had class, like the full times would take your practice. And like they told you, hey, we're paying for your school, so you're going to school. Hmm. Whereas, you know, I'm sure you ask GAs from maybe some larger Power 5 schools, maybe it wasn't like that.
I don't think I realized you only did 20, it was 20 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I realized.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we were kind of on campus all the time anyways because of class, but...
Right, right.
But yeah, literally the actual clinical aspect, yeah, we were... It was only about 20 hours a week.
With 14-hour a day... Not a day.
The track meet.
14-hour track meets week.
The track meets on Saturdays. We would have to kind of sometimes count for those. Yeah, those do take a long time. Yes, I was out in the rain for 14 hours. What a time.
You were. I think we were.
Yeah, we were. You were out there.
So, anyway, I did ask on our Instagram, how was your transition from being a student to being a certified athletic trainer? Oh, by the way, I think, I feel like this was a request. I think it was from one of my students, probably last fall, but I wanted to wait until kind of now to do it because I figured, I know a lot of people are taking their BOCs right now.
Yeah.
It's National Athletic Training Month.
One of my students is taking it, I think, Thursday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That like I knew, but no, I don't know.
what a time.
Yeah, but like the window's open right now, so I figured this would be a good time to get this in. And even if you're not transitioning to practice, kind of like just reminiscing on...
Oh boy, memories.
How that was. But anyway, I did ask, how was your transition? And I was kind of expecting this to be a little bit more one-sided.
Okay.
But most were actually average.
I mean, what do you like? I mean, what do you expect when you first come out? Like, I don't know. Like,
I thought it was going to either be like bad, like okay. people were like, oh my goodness. So, yeah, right. Or like the complete shock of the profession, right? Or like, oh, I was so worried, but it's actually way better than I thought. That's what I kind of thought people were going to go with.
I feel like average. Like yeah, for the most part, I feel like you got a pretty good handle. It's like kind of like the stuff that you probably didn't really get to see as a student that really kind of comes in. You're like, oh,
right, right. Oh. So I did. Let's actually look and see what we're going to go over. So
let's do it.
Because you don't know anything about what's in this episode, huh?
I'm always just flying off the seat of my pants on these ones.
I did ask about if you think your first job helped with your transition to practice. Yes. I asked about the best part about being a certified athletic trainer versus being a student.
So many best parts.
But I also included the opposite. The best part about being a student and best part about being certified. Nice.
You know, that is true. Right? Like, when you think about the student aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
like there's definitely some pros to that. I mean, me being certified, no. I'm,
would you go back?
No, definitely not. I love where I'm at, and I love being a certified athletic trainer and all the positives and even the cons that do come with being the certified.
Right, right. And then we talk a little bit about how your program has prepared you. Oh, and mentors.
Oh, that's always good.
Any chance to talk about mentors, we will talk about
mentors.
We're
big mentoring here.
Yes. Okay, so.
A mentor shower. Get it like meteor shower, but mentor. Mentor shower.
You're really reaching with these.
I really wanted to go with that. I thought it sounded cool.
So
it wasn't my best work, okay?
So going back to this poll, do you think your first job helped with your transition to practice? Only 9% of people said not at all.
That's bummer.
The rest were 55% yes and 36% in some ways.
Mine's yes.
Mine is yes.
Mine's a solid yes.
Yep.
I learned a lot as a grad assistant.
Tell me about your grad assistantship.
Well,
I guess tell them about your grad.
It was a really cool experience. Yeah, that first year, that was a tough one. It's just, especially being like, I mean, granted, anytime you have your own team after being a student is tough, but I had the joys of track. Mm-hmm. So we had about 80 athletes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, trying to balance all that, and yeah, it was stressful. And like, again, now you're making the decisions.
Right.
So, but I think that second year is like, I really started to feel that groove, like being able to manage the, like the coaches and like, you know, letting them feel heard and like trying to like communicate with them better. And then also managing like getting kids to the doctor and like stuff like that, and trying to be ahead of the game instead of being like, I think a lot of it is like when you first get into being a certified, like I feel like everything's reactionary because you don't necessarily know like how to be proactive on some things. So like I learned a lot about being proactive, being prepared for like, this kid's probably going to be like a medical redshirt, so we should probably start the ball now instead of
right,
like later.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like stuff like honestly, it's all the admin stuff.
Actually, that's what a lot of people said.
Like, I think it's like the practice part. Yes, like you're still trying to like hone your skills and like the art of athletic training, of course. Mm.
But you honestly, you still do that when you're
100%. Like we're always still doing that,
right?
But like for the most part, like you're gonna keep people alive.
Right.
And we're going to make like positive impacts on people.
Right.
Right. Of course, like we said, we can always get better at it and stuff like that. But I think the admin side, like you're just not fully ready for what that all entails, because like,
even if you get a taste of it, I feel like it's different when it's on your shoulders.
Yeah. It's different when it's on your shoulders. I don't know how you would really even teach it in school. Like obviously you get the concepts, but like some of the admin stuff that like you do, especially as you go into higher roles, it's like how do you teach someone, like how do you teach someone to do that?
Right.
You know? So it's
so specific too, because like I can teach you how to do an insurance claim form at the community college if you work with our insurance company.
Yeah.
But if you go anywhere else and they don't use that insurance company, or if you go to any other setting, like it's gonna be different, which is why I think that it's hard to teach that.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, that's only like a small snippet of what like
right
the admin process is, right? There's right. like, you know, data, like being able to track data on like injuries and like, you know, value stuff like that, or also just from an aspect of like policies and procedures, like how do you mm-hmm. communicate that, hey, our policies and procedures need to be updated or needs to be created, right? Maybe you're at a new place that doesn't right. have any.
Right.
Right. I think, or talking to administrators,
mm-hmm.
like sitting on a meeting with other administrators and being able to, you know, advocate for the needs of the department and the student athlete. You know, you don't really get taught that.
I have had a couple of great administrators who have had our students be able to sit in on some of the meetings.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. When my co-head and I were negotiating stuff, or not like salaries, but like kind of like policies and mm-hmm. or I can't remember what specifically, but I remember there was a topic that we were kind of like going back and forth in for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were like, okay, well, we got to go on this meeting. And so we just brought our student in with us and they were able to see that. And then we debriefed about it afterward.
Yeah.
But you don't get that everywhere.
No. Or also having to manage a meeting and practice all at the same time.
Yep.
Yep. I've had those. I used to be at women's soccer practice with a meeting in my ear. Usually the athletes knew I was on a meeting when they saw the AirPod and I was like talking to myself and like, oh, he must be meeting.
So our first story is from Josie. He said, my first year certified, I covered wrestling. It was something I was nervous about and never wanted to cover in my career. It was my first time dealing with coaches that got under my skin.
I love that.
I didn't understand the wrestler mindset at all. I eventually understood that this would make me grow professionally and as a person. I wanted this relationship to work. Something clicked. I knew I had to let my wall down to understand these individuals. Once I understood the coaches, the players, and the mindset of a wrestler, I was able to build these relationships, and my job as a certified got much easier when working with the team. I was also just not prepared for all the skin fold and hydration tests. But you get really good at this as time gets on. And you get really good at skin conditions.
Oh, I bet. Oh, I bet.
You know what? I liked this one, and I put it first because there is so much to learn from something that you don't want to deal with.
True.
And a lot of times, like, if you feel like you're not really thinking about, like, oh, I don't really want to go that avenue. Even if it's something you don't foresee yourself doing yeah. long term, you could learn so much from it. And yeah. you don't know until you're there.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I was pretty set that I didn't want to work at a high school. And
yeah.
only solely because I didn't want to be alone. Like, that was the sole reason that I did not want to be at a high school. And when I, and my like transition story is a little bit odd because my immersive rotation is what my first job was. So
yep.
it was, that transition was like super easy, especially because I got certified, like I took my BOC and passed like super early into my immersive.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just kind of started treating me the same
yeah,
as when I got certified. So honestly, like that transition for me, I don't really count that transition because I feel like it was kind of the same. And it was a non-traditional setting. It was mm-hmm. in performing arts. So just like that, it was just like, I don't count that as my transition practice. What I really count is when I went off on my own, we moved 2 hours away from home, and that's when I started working at the high school.
Yep.
And that's when I started actually getting more like autonomy. That was my own everything, independence, yep. my decisions. And I was really nervous because even though like I felt like I had a good handle and like emergency scenarios are like my strength, I was just nervous in like the evaluation and like, who am I going to fall back on yeah. if, you know, I don't know what's going on. And, you know, that's what I was worried about. And I feel like and some of these stories are going to share it too, but when you have to make the decisions yourself, my confidence skyrocketed.
Yeah, 100%.
I was not a confident student at all. Mm-hmm. And going and being come certified, especially being alone after I did not want to be alone.
Yeah.
Because I was like, how am I going to grow? Who am I going to learn from?
Yeah.
If I'm alone. That's what I was.
Yeah, it's true.
Especially after seeing you go through your GA.
Yeah.
And having people to like in your corner. We were moving. So like even like any mentors I had, I'd have to call or text other than Randy.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like what you said, like that after you got certified, like your first job was when you got certified, like you were still a student and then you got certified and you were still working there.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of like, because like I did my undergrad and grad school, same place. So yeah, that first year, like a part of it is like, it's hard for that staff too to not, like you were literally just a student with them.
Right.
To not treat you like a student. So there were definitely some multiple times that I felt that way.
Right.
That we've had, that I would have to have conversations and like, hey, this is kind of messed up. Like,
right.
I'm not a student.
Right. But they're like, just a couple months doesn't make any difference.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, like when you first get certified, right, you want that independence because that does, that's true. It does help you grow, you know, like being out there and just experiencing it and unfortunately messing up on things. Like, obviously not bad, just like things would have went better if you would have done it this way.
Right.
And then and that's how you learn it. And that's how you never forget it.
Exactly. But also I feel like there are certain things that you... like the more and more you see things like Joe was saying, like the more and more like you see skin conditions, like now he's getting good at skin conditions.
100%.
And you really can't, you can read so much about that. And until you're actually living it and experiencing it, you really, it's different.
Actually, I was just about to say that when you become certified is when you really start getting the weird things.
Yeah.
Nothing's really straightforward anymore. Conditions don't present quite like the book. That's when you get the real things.
Right. This next one's from Amanda M. She said, the few months I worked per diem after getting certified were hard. Being an assistant AT at a high school under a head AT with almost 40 years of experience gave me the confidence and tools I needed to be a secondary school AT on my own. That year and a half was key. If I went directly from being a student to an AT at a school by myself, I think my career would have collapsed.
Mm.
But I like, this is exactly why I put this one in, is because there was actually a lot of like debate back and forth in our DMs and in the question boxes. Some people were like, I think it's essential that you need to be on your own. And some people were like, I think it's essential you need to be under someone. And honestly, it is all about figuring out what you need.
I would say it's so individual.
Because I thought that I needed to be with someone. I thought for sure, like, there's no way. Being a high school AT is insanely hard.
Oh, like, 100%. That's a tough job.
It's not for the faint of heart. And I could not imagine trying to tackle that. And, like, granted, I worked at a private high school and I had, like, three sports, I think, that I was working with. So, like, I'm not even talking about, like...
but one was eight-man football.
Yeah, it was a tiny school. So, like, my high school experience is different than the generic, like, high school experience in general.
22 sports.
Exactly. Exactly. But this is, like, these are the kinds of things that I love to hear is how people have found their pathway and how they've made it their own.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
This one by Mason is actually... talking about just that.
Mason B says, being on my own was tough. I had to figure out who I was as an AT, and the diagnoses had to be mine, but it also built my confidence in a way that wouldn't have happened in a setting with coworkers. I don't think I would have found my confidence or voice being able to lean on others in a collegiate or clinical setting those first couple years. There are a lot of things I like about the high school setting, independence being a big part of it. And plenty of other reasons to recommend it, but everyone's path is different. The collegiate setting is great for growth in your knowledge base and how you practice as you watch coworkers with more experience. Clinical settings have better work-life ratio, and you can use portions of your skill set you may not use elsewhere. I believe it comes down to the individual goals and values of the clinician. I ultimately left the secondary school setting for the collegiate setting as my stagnation and growth was beginning to outweigh my development of confidence. I needed growth and a challenge, and I found it.
Isn't that awesome. Beautiful?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, first of all, beautifully written. But second, I think that even, like, Mason points out the differences between each, like, the pros and cons of each path. But not only that, but along your pathway, your own needs can change.
Yeah, 100%.
So, yes, like, being alone is great for confidence, but are you going to be able to gain the knowledge of watching other clinicians?
Yeah.
Or having someone to bounce ideas back and forth on?
Yeah. I think, like, I tell the athletic training students all the time, because, like, when you know, they come to our site, right, a lot of them say are pretty similar to the same thing of, like, oh, I want to do, like, D1 or I want to do pro. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's great, all right? Those are great goals to have if that's the setting you want and you like that. But I always tell them, I'm like, because they always have, like, the, well, you know, community college seems cool, or maybe secondary school, mm-hmm. right? Or they'll be like, oh, I'll maybe start at D1 and then kind of go there. And I tell them, look, I'm biased because I've had the experience, but I'm like, you should definitely, like, experience one of those levels. Like, it is kind of cool because you get to see a lot of different things, a lot of resources, and, like, it really helps kind of shape, you know, your philosophy, and it gives you an interesting skill set, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's also crazy. I never experienced a D1 setting, but it's crazy to me, like, coming out of school,
mm-hmm.
the amount of pressure that some D1s can put on you.
Oh, goodness.
Right. And, you know, sometimes that shapes people and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, again, it's like, just you have to figure out what mm-hmm. your own needs are.
And I was going to say, and that's another thing, you know, what you learn too is what kind of lifestyle you don't like.
Exactly.
Right? Like, no, I don't need to be available at 9:15 p.m. for a call.
No.
Right? Like that. Or
until you do it.
Be
and then
starting taping at, like, 4:30 a.m.
Right. No.
No. That sounds terrible.
You want to read this next one from Cody S?
Cody S says, I'm currently at my first AT job out of grad school. It's been a great experience thus far. I've had the opportunity to work with an emerging sport in the NCAA, women's triathlon. Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that was an emerging sport.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
That's really neat. I have already learned so much. It's nothing like you'd expect. My coaches are very supportive, and my sports medicine team is always available to help me. I reach out to my mentors every so often, mostly when I hit something I'm stumped on or when I'm planning on implementing something I want to establish in my department that wasn't there before. I've always had a confidence problem, so that is a constant battle I fight within myself. My sport incurs a ton of chronic injury, so I'm constantly trying to find ways to combat ways my athletes can continue to participate, but also get better from their injuries.
Mm-hmm. It's all about figuring out, like, you do something and you're like, oh, that was too much. Or you do something and you're like, okay, maybe I could do a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's like finding that balance. And the thing that sucks is it's not the same balance every single time.
Yeah.
But the more and more you do it, you get a better idea of
it's the
how
art.
Exactly.
It's the art of athletic training.
Exactly. We have actually a couple of GAs.
Yeah, GA life.
So I was debating whether or not to put these in because I know that GAs aren't really the biggest thing anymore.
Yeah, not, yeah, but, they're kind of gone.
But there are new things like fellowships or
internships.
Kind of internships that are kind of replacing the GA.
Or part-time.
Part-time.
Now a lot of schools are doing, like, part-times.
Right.
To be what used to be the GAs.
Right.
Christina S. says, I think being a GA really helped. I agree. I feel that. It was so helpful because I had so many people to help me and teach me in my first year. I couldn't imagine being a new certified at a high school. I'd be so lost. High school to me is a different beast, and if you can master that, you can work anywhere. I think that's true.
100%.
I feel like that's true.
I feel like more people need to understand that.
Yes, I think different beast is a good description. Mad respect for the secondary school ATs out there. I did have two clinical sites at high schools, which helped to give me a lot of autonomy. My preceptors were super chill. My program also had mock interviews, and I think the practicals were helpful somewhat for real-world situations. I personally do think those also helped in my transition and really helped with confidence and better evaluations.
You want to read the next one too?
Yes, this one's by Anonymous. Being a grad assistant was the best decision I could have made to continue developing as a professional and building autonomy. Was fortunate to have great ATCs to work with during that time who I continue to keep in contact with today. I personally had such a great experience. It's a bummer new grads now won't get that same opportunity. I worked several sports my first year. I did football with another GA and the head AT, then swim and dive and softball solo. Ooh, that's a workload right there.
Mm-hmm.
Second year, all solo volleyball, swim and dive, and softball. Mostly autonomously, but had a lot of support from the full-time ATCs. If I needed another set of eyes, really helped me develop professionally from being able to work on my own. But I also had the structure of a well-developed athletic training program. Head ATC has been there since the late 80s.
Wow.
That's a culture right there. That's culture has been set.
Right, right.
That's crazy. That's wild. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. The GA ship was, it was nice. It was, I liked my path, but again, some places, the GAs definitely were taken advantage of and put right. in a lot of hours.
Some people do like 60 or 80 hours
a week.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I was definitely jealous of your GA ship because I feel like I struggled, honestly, not with the high school, but with the per diem work. Just like Amanda was saying.
Yeah.
Per diem is freaking tough.
It's really hard.
You have no idea what you're going to walk into.
You really don't.
Like, the respect for an AT varies, let alone if people even know what that is.
Also, too, like, obviously, you're seeing this more now than kind of, like, it wasn't as mainstream, like, a few years ago mm-hmm. as it is now. But, like, even like, umpires and officials for these youth sports are stopping youth sports. Like, they don't even want to do it anymore because, like, they're getting yelled at. They're getting mistreated. So that's the same thing that happens to these ATs that work youth sport per diems.
Mm-hmm. Per diem work's tough. Honestly,
it's not easy.
I think I want to say most of my emergency situations were from per diem.
Yeah, you're right. Also, from another standpoint, too, about, like, the GA ship thing is, like, that I saw and that, now it's getting a little bit better because of all the other opportunities, was, like, how are you supposed to get a job? Like
yes,
a lot of these jobs would be, like...
that is what I struggled with.
Oh, you need work. You need this many years of experience. But you just got certified.
Right.
So they would hold that against you when the GA ships were at least... That was the benefit. Hey, you worked for 2 years.
Right. And like also moving away from home, it's not like you have that background of, hey, I did this as a student or, you know, I have this network. It's like my network is a little bit far away.
Yeah.
Not too far, but, you know.
Yeah.
So you don't have that to fall back upon. So then you're basically going out there against people who, even people who have like 3, 4, 5 years certified,
mm-hmm.
Who are way higher than you in the rankings.
Yeah.
Because everything needs at least 2 years of certification.
Oh,
but with
goodness,
a GA, with a GA ship, you get that.
Yeah, you hit that.
So GAs are a special unicorn.
You know what? It was. It served its purpose at the time, and now the void has to be filled. You know, with what's happening in the future, like you said, the fellowships and part-time work.
Right. So speaking of emergency situations, Kaylee S. says, I became comfortable quickly as a certified because 2 hours into my first shift as an ATC, I was at a soccer tournament working per diem and had a kid get kneed in the temple.
Love that.
Out cold, unresponsive for about 7 to 10 minutes. And when he came to, he had no idea where he was or what happened. He ended up being life flighted due to neurological symptoms being present. The entire EMS call was over, and I didn't even realize how cool and calmly I handled it until after the ambulance was already gone. One way to get comfortable quickly.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few hours into the shift.
Seriously.
Welcome to it.
I feel like that's how it works, is you stress about injuries and you stress about emergency scenarios until they happen, and you're like, oh.
Wasn't too bad.
Oh. I could do that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like it's, you can't explain it. You can't think about it. You can't explain it. Don't talk about it. Just do it.
Speaking of don't talk about it, man, dude, one of my students earlier in the semester, every time I came in the room, like, oh, it's pretty quiet in here. Why would you say something like that?
No, no.
Not funny, dude.
He's just trying to get you more hands-on experience.
Yeah.
I guess. Okay, so next thing we kind of talked about was mentors and their role along the way. About 58% said, yes, I did have mentors, like past tense.
Mm-hmm.
30% say, yes, I do have mentors.
Nice.
Present tense. And then 12% didn't have present or past mentors, which I think is kind of crazy. I don't really know how you 12% survive.
Yeah.
For real. Like, I'm not really sure what, like, are you just in your own bubble or?
Yeah.
12% I think was a little bit higher than I was I was expecting. And I know we did a mentorship episode. I didn't go back to see how different this poll was versus.
Oh, yeah.
I know we did a poll
before.
So that'd be fun to look at the kind of the change.
Data's fun.
You do like your data.
I do like data.
But honestly, I think mentors are the backbone of your transition to practice.
Yeah, for sure.
Not just meaning like you need to lean on them for everything, but I think you do need to check in with them for what you are stumped on.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, that's how you get growth, especially if you're alone.
Yeah.
I feel like having someone who you can even just talk things out with.
Yeah. I think it's nice because, you know, that's someone you can ask questions to that, like, when you're a student, you don't know what you don't know.
Yes.
So you don't necessarily know how to ask your preceptors about things you don't know. But when you become certified, now you're knowing the things that you didn't know, like all the admin stuff, or like, how would you handle this situation? And now you can actually articulate that.
Right.
So that's where mentors are great, because now you can actually like go more in depth on some of the stuff that's just not book athletic training. Just like, how do you do this job?
Right.
How do you do this?
You want to read this one from Jesse?
Yes. Jesse F. says, I love my mentors. 10 plus years in, and I still connect with them a few times a year. They provide perspective, guidance, and when things get tough, you know you have someone to bounce ideas off of that you trust. I wouldn't be where I am without the people who helped me. It's not always the knowledge or the communication. Sometimes it was purely being able to watch them interact with patients, coworkers, coaches, and other providers.
That.
Yeah.
100%.
Ooh, that is true. Like, their system. How do they like to do things?
So there's more to the story, but real quick, this is something that I find that I tell over and over and over again to not just students, but just people, is once you find someone who's good at their craft, watch them.
Yeah.
And learn from watching them, because we, especially as students, are so focused in like, okay, I have to figure out me and how I'm going to do this, when we forget that we have people in front of us who literally already did that process and have already figured it out. And you can go and you can watch and you can figure out how they're doing it.
Yeah.
And you can take what you like and you can leave everything else.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it just takes back, it goes back into what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. And right along those lines, Jesse continues with, there's a lot to be gained just by watching great leaders just do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, yeah, that's true. And see how effortlessly it is.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it does help give you perspective, too, is like when you start going into those roles and like you just see, like, now you're engulfed in how busy, like, your mentors were and, like, in that role. And now you're like, wow, now right. I see what their day
right.
was like.
Right.
Like, when I, like, my in my position, like, you know, kind of being, like, in a supervisor role, right, you don't realize how many meetings you have. Right. And now right. I'm, like, our, like, when Mama Max would step out of the office all the time because, like, oh, a meeting, or, oh, I got a meeting here, or, oh, I got this meeting. You could see how that's the reality, yeah.
Right. I feel bad when, like, my students are kind of hanging out in the ATR, and I'm like, all right, we did some teaching, like, we did whatever, and I'm like, all right, guys, I'm going to go back in the office, like, I got to get some stuff done.
I got to get paperwork done.
Right, right. I wish I could be out here and just hanging out here, but...
The fun parts of athletic training.
Right, right.
Jesse continues with, two of my mentors are preceptors, the rest are head ATs or coworkers where I formerly worked. I kind of think mentors are everywhere, even after graduating. You just have to be open, and before you know it, someone comes into your life who positively influences or helps you.
So I also like that part, because I feel like so many times we're like, how do we find a mentor? And yeah. sometimes people are like, well, I just don't really connect with my preceptors. And okay, like, that's totally fine. Like, just yeah. because you spent some time with them in a schoolly organized fashion, like, you don't have to necessarily have them be your mentors.
Yeah.
But some of my biggest mentors are people who I've worked with.
Yeah.
People who I just met, like, mm-hmm. met at conferences. I've met one of my biggest performing arts mentors is someone who I just met at a conference. I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah. Oh, because she had mentioned something. Maybe I overheard her talking about working backstage and, you know, just struck up a conversation. And yeah. then I was like, okay, let's have lunch. And then
you were
boom,
good at that.
We were, you know, you just have to figure out what you need. And that was what I needed. Yeah. So
you are good at doing that. Your networking skills are pretty good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So you really don't have to find someone who's just your preceptor. Like, yeah. it could be literally anyone. It could be your classmates,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to have different experiences than you.
Yeah, for sure. I remember, shoot, my class, dude, we always would bounce ideas off each other and stuff like that.
Right. I mean, as much as it is beneficial to have someone who's kind of gone through it a little bit more than you.
Yeah.
It's also beneficial to have people, like, I mean, I learn from people who are younger than me.
Yeah.
I learn from people who are less experienced than I am.
Well, hey, that's why they give CEUs for being a preceptor.
Right.
Right. You know, where, you know, they're learning the most up-to-date stuff than when we were in school. So,
right.
And plus, you know, the cool thing too with students, you know, is they have, before they get to you, like, they've had other preceptors.
Mm-hmm.
So that means they've learned a different philosophy on how to mm-hmm. do things. So there's times I'll see students doing stuff and I'm just like, oh, that's kind of interesting. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I try to tell them, like when they're doing something, I'm like, first I try to understand, okay, what were you trying to do? Like, what was your goal and stuff like that? And like, if like they, what they were doing, if that matches the goal, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I mean, that's not maybe a way I would have done it. So I'm not saying that's wrong. That's just not right. something I would have done. I never considered it that way.
Right.
So it sometimes it is kind of a cool, thought-provoking thing.
Mm-hmm. And then our last mentor story is from Kaylee S. I had the best freaking mentors. I started out at community college as a terrified athletic training student with Lori Ray. Lori was able to somehow find confidence that I had been stowing away for most of my life and helped me grow into a great first-year student. So, real quick, this actually, I feel like there's a lot of students struggle with confidence.
Yeah.
And there's, I feel like there's usually a moment that you kind of click over and you realize like, oh, wow, actually, I feel a lot more confident now.
Yeah.
Like there is something. It's either a person. It's either an experience.
Mm-hmm.
It is a change in your responsibility, something that, or a, some people said like a differential diagnosis.
Yeah.
That, or they, like a correct injury diagnosis, boom. And all of a sudden it just changed for them. So if you are feeling like you are not a confident student or even not a confident clinician, it's going to change.
It will. And, you know, I think also some of it is just the nature of being a student, right? Like everything you do basically has to run through your preceptor to varying degrees, whether you like are letting that, you have to let them know before you do it, or if, hey, if it's just a check-in thing, you're like you're reporting constantly right. about patient care.
Right.
So it leads, I feel like it leads to this like thought process. Oh, you have to seek approval and you have to,
right.
there's a right answer and a wrong answer. And like, you know, and how school sets up, right? Like your scenarios, right? You're finding a diagnosis. Well, in mm-hmm. real life, like that doesn't happen.
Right.
So I think that also, I feel like kind of handicaps some, or I feel like that kind of limits some students, is the fact that it's like, you feel like you have to keep seeking approval. And then when you're certified, now you're like, I don't know who to turn to. Who's going to tell me right. I was right?
Right.
Or like, who's going to say like, oh, well, maybe we should do it this way. Cause now it's you who mm-hmm. has to be the one that has like, well, maybe we should do it this way.
Right. That's where I think students also get like caught up.
Yeah.
I know when like I ask my students, before, depending on where they're at in their program, for example, let me say like a first year, before you do what you're going to do, I want you to tell me the mechanism,
mm-hmm.
the injury that you're thinking is happening, and then give me the details of why.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Oh, that's good.
So then, okay, now we have like an injury we're like working with, because then it also strengthens their like, okay, this is what happened.
Yeah.
And this is like the injury that occurred because mm-hmm. of it. So like if they say like, they inverted their ankle and they have a high ankle sprain, I'm gonna be like, okay. Like, does that make yeah. sense? When you put it in those terms, yeah. right? And then we create a problem list. So that's like, okay, well, what are they dealing with? Pain, swelling, weakness. Okay. So now we have to find something to address the pain, something to address the weakness, something to address the swelling. Right. So I feel like that, like some students view that as like, oh, you're telling me what to do.
Yeah.
And some students view that as like, oh, it's strengthening my skills.
Yeah.
When in reality, most of the time I'm going to let them do what they come to me asking.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Or if it's something like, oh, they just got injured and we're going to put heat on it. Okay, let's think about why
yeah.
this. And so really it's like you feel like as a student, you're like, oh, I feel like I'm being judged and
yeah.
being told that I'm wrong. When in reality, like that's just part of the process of strengthening your skills and yeah. your knowledge.
I would say, yeah, that's true. For the most part, yeah. Anytime they come up with an idea, like we're going to do that idea. It's just, I'm going to throw something in
right,
that I think
right.
is going to be more like, not more benefit. I'm going to throw something in that's going to help enhance that goal that they want
to
do.
But that's the thing too, is I feel like if they come to me and they're like, oh, like I'm thinking about doing this, and I'm like, okay, like I think that we're going to cup. Okay. Let's talk about cupping. Do they still have cup marks on them? Like,
yeah.
I don't really know if that's a really good idea for them to do today, but here's what I would do. And then we could discuss.
Yeah.
Because even that process, that's the observation that I was telling you yep. or that we were talking about earlier is, oh, you know, in this situation, now the next time that I see someone that, oh, you know what? I think they'd benefit from cupping. You know what? Actually, we had this discussion earlier. My preceptor has done this before, so maybe I can take this into this new situation and see if that kind yeah. of works. Because that's just a new experience for you.
Yep.
It's so hard not to personalize it, though, and be like, oh, this is just my preceptor telling me that I'm wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or my preceptor telling me that I can't do what I want to do.
Yeah.
There's a reason why, unless you have a super controlling preceptor, there's a reason why they are, I don't want to say telling you.
There's a reason why they're throwing in some input.
Right, right. And that's the thing is there really is an art, like we talked about, to this practice.
Yeah.
And so your preceptor is not going to always be right either. But
that's true.
Then you start using your communication and your negotiating skills that people don't feel like they got in their program.
Yeah, you know, that brings up a good point, because I've definitely had, like, when I was a student, preceptors that, like, there were just some things philosophy-wise that I didn't really like for me, mm-hmm. and I found success in doing it slightly different, mm-hmm. you know, and so same thing, right? The way I do things, one of my students, you know, may not 100% feel like, oh, that was I feel like I could do it a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is about, right? Like, I hope the students, like, kind of, like, pick and choose different philosophies from us and not try to be 100%, because there's only one Sandra. There's only one Sandra athletic trainer, like, mm-hmm. what she can do, you know, and that's what makes it special. That's what makes it unique. So hopefully each student that comes out just takes bits and pieces of her philosophies and just being a carbon copy.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, back to the story. Jamie Jenkins, my now boss, Kaylee says, also joined the team of certifieds and helped me become more comfortable in my position as a student. In my second year as a student, I did even more rotations with plenty of amazing people who continued to help me grow into a well-rounded student. After I graduated, I was able to apply at the community college and become a certified, where it all started. About 2 months after I started and about 4 months after I graduated and became certified, I ended up in a pinch having to take over and become interim head for my boss while she was on maternity leave. That was a great experience and allowed my confidence to grow on a level that I don't know it could have in any situation. My best advice to students out there is to hop into whatever you can and be proactive. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable, even though I know you've heard that too many times to count. It's true.
Athletic training's about being adaptable.
It's my catchphrase.
Is that true?
Yep. You heard it here first.
Yes, that is by a very wise, wise clinician.
It's really true. I think that kind of goes back to the first story that, from Joe, that's just like, you don't know what situation you're going to be in. Like, as much as he didn't want to be in wrestling, like, as much as I thought that I didn't want to be in high school, as much as Kaylee didn't expect to be in a full interim position. Like, that kind of happened to me at the community college. Uh-huh. I had, for a month, I had been pulled up to full-time just because one of our coworkers was leaving for some family stuff. But that was really beneficial to me. And that was not, like, right when I first got certified, but it was still when I was working part-time. So...
Yeah.
Helpful. Sure. So kind of transitioning kind of in the last section is more about programs. And do you feel like your program prepared you for the real world?
Ooh, interesting. I mean, I would say yes.
I think there's a couple different ways people took this. So, like, for example, this first anonymous one, they said, I didn't have the confidence to do it on my own. I knew my stuff on paper, but lacked communication skills with coaches. What and how to tell players about their injuries was another thing I lacked. So it kind of shows you, like, some of the things that we talk about in more your rotations.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you had, like, well-rounded rotations, and how much of this falls on preceptors and rotations, and how much of it falls on your book smarts and your like what you learn out of a textbook, you know what I mean? Because both are essential to success.
Oh, 100%.
Is you can have a preceptor who's really great at evaluations, but if you don't have that book background, it's gonna be different.
Yeah, for sure.
And then another one from Jennifer T. So much of this profession is experiential in nature. We are given the tools, but it is what we do with them that matters most.
100%. And again, it goes back to the art. Mm-hmm. The art of athletic training, right? The art of medicine just in general, right? It definitely, I think the book stuff is like a foundation, and it's just, again, the tools in your toolbox, but it's the way you apply them and how you build off of that is what, you know, dictates your practice.
Right.
And that's why it's called practice. Every day is practice.
Exactly. And I feel like a lot of students are so nervous to transition to practice because they feel like they have to know everything.
Yes.
But you really, you can't. Even go ask someone who's been certified for 30 years and they'll tell you they don't know everything. Yeah. Yeah. They've seen a lot.
Seen a lot.
Right. Also, I feel like, and we didn't talk about this yet, but I feel like your confidence, and at least from what I've experienced personally, but also just from what I've kind of seen and kind of heard other people talk about too, is I feel like you first get certified and your confidence skyrockets. If your confidence skyrockets, then that's the point where it skyrockets. It feels really good. Because you're like, I'm not under a preceptor anymore. I don't have to, like...
I'm the captain now.
Yeah, I don't have to please anyone. You know, like, I feel really good. And then it drops when you realize that you don't know anything.
Yeah. Where it seems like you just don't know anything about athletic training anymore.
Right. And I don't think that it drops to the point that you're at a student level.
Yeah.
But it significantly drops, and then you kind of start building that back up realistically.
The profession tears you down to build you back up.
Yes. Hey, you know what? That's how soreness works, and that's how we get gains. So
gains. We're all about gains.
It's the exact same thing, right?
All about gains at AT Corner.
So we got another anonymous one if you want to read this one.
Anonymous says, I wouldn't say I wasn't confident to start, but I was just thinking the other day with all the experience I gained that everything just comes so natural now. I'm just so much more sure about myself and comfortable than when I first started. My program was great with focusing on special topics, including admin, budgeting, third-party reimbursement, emergency situations, professional workshops, and interview skills. We had a special topics class that would focus on various subjects. Sometimes there would be a guest speaker on a topic, etc. As far as confidence, I would say since the beginning, I've always put a lot of emphasis on communication. Even when I've been wrong when it comes to a diagnosis, etc., I always explain my line of thinking or why I think something. I think providing that information and education helps earn trust and over time has actually helped build confidence. I think my confidence is connected to maintaining great communication and bed, or should I say, feel side manners.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
I think that's important because, like, there's nothing worse than when you, like, go to the doctor and the doctor hits you with a, like, oh, it's this. For sure it's this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, doesn't care to, like, take in anything else or other differentials. Nope, it's this. And then it ends up as being something completely different.
Right.
Right. That kind of hits you like, oh, man, this guy's kind of messed up. All right. So, like, I like that, just being able to, like, hey, here's why I think it is. And then, like, when that patient or, you know, athlete starts talking about, like, oh, well, what if, could it be like this? Like, having that conversation, like, oh, well, it could, but here's why I kind of don't think it may not be. And sometimes it's okay to be like, I'm not 100% sure on this one.
Mm-hmm.
It might be this, but we're going to have to dig in a little bit deeper to find that answer.
I mean, just today I sent someone for an x-ray that I didn't think that it was fractured.
Yeah.
Actually, I still don't know. We're waiting.
TBD.
But there were too many things that didn't allow me to feel confident having this person walk away without getting an x-ray.
Yeah.
And so I explained that to them and I'm like, listen, like, I don't know if this is fractured or not. Like, my fracture tests are positive, but my fracture tests are not an x-ray.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of things that are telling me you need to go get this further imaged, but it doesn't necessarily, just because I'm sending you for an x-ray, doesn't mean that we're 100% dealing with a fracture.
Yeah. Also, school's paying for it. Just get the picture. That is too. Yeah, that's true too. Like when I'm talking to students about, again, diagnosis, like again, they're like, I think just with like how school is and like, you know, like scenarios, like, right, they're always trying to find the right answer. It has to be right 100% of the time. Right. And it's like, you're putting like unfair pressure on you, because even when you go to a doctor, right, someone who went through medical school, who, and then if they go into a specialty, right, has had a residency, fellowships, all like years of advanced medical training.
Mm-hmm.
When you send them to, you know, when you send an athlete or when you go see the doctor, right? Yeah, they'll do the clinical test, but what else do they have the advantage of? They have like imaging, right? They can do an X-ray. Oh, we'll do an MRI, right? So they're not just making a they're making a diagnosis with all this information. What we're being asked is to make a clinical diagnosis based on our hands and what we see, what we feel. So no, we don't have X-ray vision.
Mm-mm.
Hey, we're pretty good with our hands. We're pretty good with our feel. But, you know, it's okay to just be like, hey, you know what? I just don't like the way this is feeling. Let's just get a picture.
Well, I had someone who was positive on all the meniscus tests, and we thought for sure it was like some sort of like bucket handle tear or some sort of meniscus, but ended up being a cartilage injury, and you can't really tell the difference in the clinic.
Yeah.
Until you get that imaging. So, honestly, we're going to treat it the same way. So I feel like as a student, there's a lot of emphasis put on the diagnosis when really you just have to figure out you have the right body part, and you got to figure out that there are symptoms, and you start treating their symptoms. And as long as you know when to refer and when not to refer, you know, which line you kind of ride. Yeah.
And along those lines, is going back to like the X-ray, I feel like a lot of people like beat themselves up about like fractures, and like if they send someone for an X-ray and the X-ray was negative, and they're like, oh man, like
no, you sent it because you
you didn't feel right about it,
right?
And now you can have confidence for sure, or like pretty for sure, like probably 95% confidence intervals, that's not fractured,
right?
Whereas if you delay it. And you're just like, no, I don't think so. And you wait too long, and then all of a sudden it comes back fractured. You're like you kind of left that time of like unknown and like beating yourself up and stressing yourself out. So
It's also HIPAA to give out injury information. So it's not like you need to have that diagnosis other than for the athlete who's going to see doc if it's something significant, or if it's like significant that needs imaging. Or if like you're not exactly telling the 100% injury details to even your coaches. So I feel like we put a lot of emphasis on diagnosis, but we really don't need to. Another thing that, before we get into the next like part, is talking about preceptors. And some people were like, man, I wish that my preceptors were more, like, let me do more. Or some of them were like, man, I wish that my preceptors kind of guided me a little bit more. Because there's both sides. You know, we got a lot of people who said one of kind of each side. I feel like you kind of actually have to get, there's a reason why you don't just have one rotation. Like, you have to have your preceptors who are more guided, and you have to have the preceptors who give you more autonomy. Like, you're never going to have a preceptor that kind of, not never going to have a single preceptor, but like, you're not going to get it all from one preceptor. There's a reason why you have multiple rotations.
Mm-hmm. And also, be nice to your preceptors. Sometimes they forget. And sometimes they
forget
just,
what?
Like they want to let you do more.
But then
they just get into their daily groove of the day, and the next thing you know, they did everything, and they're just like, oh, whoops.
Right.
So sometimes be nice to your preceptors.
You'll know when you're certified and you have students.
Yes.
I think there's also a reason why people do things like, for example, if, let's say, my immersive student has someone who is perfectly fit for crutches and wrapped, and they gave them the patient education and they sent them on their way, except that I wish that they didn't send them on their way because I just need to you know, coaches, that's a really important player, and, you know, maybe they have a history of something that this student didn't know. And, you know, this is something that I know based on the fact that I've been here before and I've worked with this coach, I've worked with this athlete. And like, there's just some information that you might not get that's not necessarily clinical.
Yep.
And it's not necessarily a textbook. Or like, man, we didn't do the insurance form, or we didn't get their whatever it is. Like, there's just a little bit more to the situation sometimes that I think that students don't see.
See, that's the admin side.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, you brought up a good point, and I didn't think about it, but like the medical history, right? Like, at the beginning of the year, when we get the medical history, right, I comb through it to find things that I just don't like, or that I need to make note of, or like, okay.
And sometimes the students are part of that.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's like, if it's someone who the medical history was done in the fall, but now you're a spring student, then
exactly,
you're not getting that.
So yeah, and you know, I'll find something, oh, we need to work on this. But like, yeah, like especially those middle of the year rotation people, they come in and they don't know. Right, it's not fair to expect them to know.
Right,
but you wouldn't do that at a job.
Right.
So that's the tough part, right? Like, those tasks are so job specific that it's like, the athletic training students, we're teaching them on how to do other aspects of the job that doesn't sometimes get considered. Right. And like, yes, they did everything they were supposed to as far as crutch fitting goes, but it's those fine little things about athletic training.
Right, right.
Like, yeah, like you're right. Like, the difference, like, hey, if this is a big, like a fairly big contributor onto the team, right?
Right.
It's not just fitting the kid for crutches and it was done perfectly. It's also like, well, now I know coach is going to see this kid in crutches and immediately have an aneurysm.
Or call me.
Yeah.
Or like,
oh, or show up.
Like when I'm doing the injury report and I'm asking the students, okay, who saw this person? What are we putting on the injury report for them? And who saw this person? And, you know, we're writing all this down, right? And then it's, okay, what's their status for today? Because that's part of what you have to decide. Yep. Like, okay, they're going to do non-contact, or they're going to be out for practice. Okay, so we have to have this discussion, like, okay, well, do they actually have to be out for practice, or can we modify? Yeah. Can they get on the bike instead of doing, you know? But then it's like, okay, well, I didn't actually, if I'm giving you a really loose lead and I didn't actually see this person, when coach calls me and I have to say, hold on, I, as a certified, did not look at this person, let me go consult my student.
Yeah.
You know, that's also not a good look for the certified as well.
Yeah.
So you have to also take into consideration, even if your preceptor is going to let you talk to the coaches and do all that as well. Like, there's a little bit more background that you don't see.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Like I said, man, I remember, like, if it was someone really important, the minute they came off the track in pain, in about 10 minutes, coach is going to come walking in, concerned.
Mm-hmm.
With five,
you give it 10 minutes?
With 500, yeah. With 500 questions. And then, obviously, I haven't even looked at the kid yet, so
right.
Can't give you any answers right now. Give me a minute.
Right.
Then I would text coach, let him know, hey, this is the situation. And then I would email an injury report that includes that information. And then the next day, probably in the office, to talk to the coach, because I'm sure some new questions came up overnight.
Right.
Yes, the athletic training students do not see that sometimes.
No.
Or the time, or after the text message and injury report, the phone call you get.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Fun times.
Fun times. So going back to anything you would have added to your program, Megan L. with a hot take, weight training as a class. I had to teach myself everything I know. Knowing the ins and outs of the weight room is vital in both the college and the high school setting. Your athletes respect you a lot more if you work out in the weight room on top of what you know that you're talking about in the weight room. I was working with a high schooler and I was telling her some adjustments to make in the weight room. I asked her, does that make sense? Will you do those things? And she said, yes, because I know you lift too with the calluses on your hands.
That's funny.
This is so much bigger than just weight training. Like, obviously when someone comes in and they're like, oh, I was doing a clean and I hurt, you know, my collarbone. You're like, what? Like, if you don't know what a clean is, then...
You're cleaning?
Right. Then it's not going to make sense. So it's the same thing with sport. It's the same thing with physical activity. It's the same thing with whatever population you're working. Knowing the ins and outs of that. And I think this goes back to so much of what, like, I didn't grow up in sports, like traditional sports. I did a lot of like individual sports, like swim and tennis and kind of like stuff like that. But honestly, my main thing was like gymnastics, dance, stuff like that. So I feel like not like now I work with football. I've never played football. And so there's a lot of things that I feel like I have to learn without being able to be part of that experience.
Yeah.
And so I know it's going to sound like really nerdy and crazy, but like my field vision got 100% better after Randy and I played Madden because I was able to understand, like, even though like it's a video game and like it's not real life, I'm not like running, but like I could see the holes that the running back has to go through, or I could see like how defense has to set up, and it just makes a little bit more sense than you just coming in blind and not really understanding.
Yeah.
I mean, Johns Hopkins method, like you don't do anything unless you've done it to yourself, right?
Yeah, it's true. Is that really what that's called? Johns
Hopkins? I think it's the Johns Hopkins method.
That makes sense. I think that's fair, right? Like everything that I've had, treatments I do for my athletes, I've at least experienced it.
Right.
A lot of it's so I can tell them.
Exactly.
Hey, here's what it kind of feels like. Like this is what you can kind of expect.
I was just telling my coworker the other day, and I'm hoping obviously not to jinx myself, but I'm saying I don't think it would be for me personally, not for an athlete, but for me personally, it would be beneficial to my career if I tear my ACL, because then...
Yeah, let's not do this. No.
Hear me out. Because then I could understand what the surgery feels like afterward, what it feels like throughout the rehab process.
That's what I'd be intrigued about.
Just because I had stitches on my knee like at the beginning of this year, and it was freaking crappy. Like it sucked a lot.
Well, it was also in like a really crappy spot.
Like I couldn't bend my knee.
Yeah.
So that really sucked. And of course, being stupid, I decided late, like in the process, that I wanted to rock climb. So I know. But things like that. Like I understand like how that feels.
Yeah.
Right now that I've been through it. Same thing, like I injured my shoulder, and then the first thing I did was go to the athletic training room and try all the different modalities. Like, oh, let me try the cold on this machine versus this machine.
Yeah.
Let me try the stim on this setting versus this setting, because I'm actually in pain, so I can actually feel what it feels like.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
It's and powerful.
It's not something that I'm saying you can add to a program necessarily, but
when
I remember that when I got into my program, we did an interview to get in the program, and one of the questions they asked was, what is the thing you think you're going to struggle with the most? And I said, knowing the ins and outs of some of the sports that I haven't experienced. And some of the people in my interview were like, oh, that's like not that important. And I go back to that all the time because of how important it is.
Back to the weight training part. Another thing is like exercises, like it helps expand your just your thought process on exercises. Like, so you can have like a deeper like selection process of what exercises you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, man, like I don't know how it is for like other programs, but like for ours, like strength and conditioning, like the strength and conditioning class was a part of our program.
Mm-hmm.
So like learning strength and conditioning principles, because that can help with rehab, especially later rehab, but also understanding that side of it, because maybe you work with strength coaches and now you kind of understand like, oh, where their philosophy is coming from, or like, even if you don't have a strength conditioning coach, right? Kids still lift. Mm-hmm. So if you're, you know, having an idea of, well, why are we lifting this way? Or like, hey, yeah, that sounds all right. Or like, oh, no, no, I don't think we should do that anymore. Maybe we should change that lifting style. All right, so at least it gives you an idea, because like a lot of these places, like, you're the only healthcare professional on campus, right, or at least the only one who knows really about athletic and activity performance.
Right.
So you're going to be the one who gets the questions about like supplements and like lifting techniques and stuff like that. So at least having at least some baseline of knowledge, I felt was very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to read this next one by Allison B?
Yes. Allison B says, being the first AT at a high school, my first year out of postgrad, I wish someone in school had reinforced, you get to make the decision, not everybody else. Ooh, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching that you have to choose your battles as an AT. Yes, 100%. Not everything has to be a battle. I have learned that too. Allison continues, because I chose all the wrong battles. Melting face emoji. I do feel like I've gotten better at it now. For me, it's a lot of, is it the situation that makes me feel this way or the person?
Big.
I think choosing battles comes with experience, but also deciding what is worth your mental time. Not great advice, but it's what I feel like.
I think it's great advice.
It 100%, especially as you start going into like more admin generated roles or like leadership roles or managerial roles, right? Again, a lot of meetings, which means it's a lot of battles that are in front of you to choose. Mm-hmm. And I think, yes, it is very important to say, what hill am I willing to die on?
Okay, but you also have to understand, I think this will also help put it in perspective of why ATs deal with so many battles. Because no one else is looking out for the safety at the forefront.
Yes.
That is literally our job.
100%.
And that is some people's nemesis.
Yes.
So that is why we're always going to have an uphill battle, because that's not, even though people care about safety, it's not the priority most of the time. So some of those things aren't going to align.
Until it becomes the ultimate priority.
Right. So you kind of have to figure out where you, what hills you want to die, what hills you want to die on, right? That sounded really weird when I said it slow. But yeah, it's, you can't have every battle or you really won't last in this profession.
And also too, another consideration is like, if you're battling everything, right, I feel like it, sometimes it makes it less likely to, for you to get the bigger battle that you really want, because now you're just the complainer of the group.
Right.
But it's true, like, I feel like we are in the position, of course, to think for the, like you said, like the utmost, the forefront of student athlete wellness and safety. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why for me, like, that's why it's always important to me that like I remind them that I'm here for the student athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's true, in situations like that, they don't have their voice being said. All right, like, you know, like this, like looking at like even like larger NCAA schools going through like this conference realignment, you know, we have like now schools traveling basically from West Coast to East Coast. Like that decision, I'm sure student athletes were not in the room
mm-hmm.
when that decision was made. So mm-hmm. what is going to be the consequence health and safety wise, you know?
Right.
So I think that's what, again, that shows where our thinking is, and where, again, everyone, of course, is going to say they want safety for their student athletes, but how much of a quote unquote priority on that list for other people in that room could be debated.
Right. So just in the rest of the question box, people wrote they want more gen med, imaging, more paperwork and insurance claim processes, strength and conditioning course, hosting and planning events, job interviews, non-traditional setting rotations, which I know some schools do a non-traditional setting.
Yeah, they do. Imaging.
So I feel like yes and no on imaging, because I feel like it's not like we would diagnose off an image.
Yeah.
So like it's helpful to, like, maybe it would be helpful within like an anatomy class.
Yeah.
To see.
I like it because, like, it gives me my bearings of when I'm looking.
Like, we're taking an imaging class right now, and it is insanely cool, and like, I think it's helping a ton, but
yeah.
But I think just I'm playing devil's advocate as far as, like, program.
Yeah.
Versus continuing ed.
Like, I like it as, because, like, again,
I don't think you need it to become a big, like, entry-level clinician. Yeah,
I see
saying.
What you're saying. But I think it is nice because when you're going, like, when you're at that job, right, again, you're going to be handed the disc and you're going to look. And
yes, but we keep adding more and more.
Yes.
That is so much pressure on athletic trainers. Like, honestly, athletic trainers now, as a master's degree, you can't fight me on this. believe that they are taught so much more than even the bachelor's and the internship route.
Oh yeah, like even just from look at the Katie standards, right?
That's what I'm saying. It's like the standards now
are
insane compared to like where they ever have been. And it's not just because they're changing, like they're updating standards, but they're adding standards. And the standards that are out now are even like more strict than the ones that I had to deal with. And so I can just imagine, like, down the road how that's going to continue.
Yeah.
It's just going to, like, the profession keeps adding more, which is great. Like, I'm not fighting it.
No, it's a good
I'm
thing.
Just saying, like, there's...
It shows how skilled.
So much.
Yes.
In this.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, like I said, I think from a standpoint of getting your bearings, and I think it can help, like, if we're questioning, like, an image, or like if we're questioning, like
I'm not saying it's not helpful.
But I'm saying why as an entry level, because again, you're going to be in those positions, and I think it would help to be like if you went to go see some random doc, and yeah, they got the imaging, but we're kind of like not really going anywhere. Like you're not progressing like they should. Like being able to at least have some like, oh well. What about this? This kind of looks weird. And then kind of asking your physician, hey, here's the disc. Here's where I kind of see something weird. I don't know. I feel like that'd be a little helpful.
So some physicians are really great. Like one of my team physicians previously would like send us an image and then be like, do you see this right here? Like he would call and be like, do you see this right here? This is like whatever itis cool thing in the bone that I'm like, well, I've never even heard of that.
But they did.
Right. And so like that helped. And obviously like if you go to a doctor's visit, like you can see the doc point out and show you things. So 100%. That's only as much as you're getting. But like there's ways around that. I wish there was more continuing ed on imaging.
I feel like that is one area that there's not a lot of.
No.
It's really hard to find something like that.
Right.
And I get some of it, like going through our class, like,
plugging Ohio U, that's where we're taking it.
Like, it is an intense class.
It is. It's an intense class.
So, like, I see that being hard, too, as, like, a continuing ed, like at a conference or something. Like, I don't know how you would necessarily structure it, you know? Because it is intense, like, what we're
going
through.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yes and no. Like, I feel like even just parts, like, oh, let's go over the shoulder for 45 minutes.
Yeah. I see that.
Or even if it's just like one type, like shoulder MRIs.
Yeah. I think that's one thing too, like that's lacking is like we talk about diagnostic ultrasound all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool. I really want to start using it. But it's like we talk about it and how useful it is. But I feel like there's not really anything out there about, okay, here's how you actually read it.
There is for PTs.
I know, but I'm saying like for us.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, I feel like... Because
we don't have a basics of imaging, so why would we...
Yeah. See, that's why, like, I'm like, there's always stuff on it and why it's beneficial and like, oh, here, look at the image. But I feel like there's nothing solid of like, here's how you actually read it.
Right.
The fuzzy thing that's on the screen.
Right. So people did ask, like, some people did have some of these things. Like, they did have extra gen med stuff. They did have job interview stuff.
We did have strength and conditioning.
So... some of the stuff you can also get from your preceptors. You could just like ask.
Yep.
And I know like we always say like you don't know what you don't know, so it's hard to like ask. Like if you don't fully understand an insurance claim, it's hard to like ask when you would do one or like
how
you know, so stuff like that. But job interviews, this is something you can also do with your preceptors. That's something that my former co-head instilled in our site. So we would host job interview, like mock interviews with our students. And I think they went really well. Like,
that's cool.
We would look at their resume and their cover letter, and we would highlight it for them and kind of change some things and tell them why. And of course, again, cover letters and resumes are really tough because they are also very subjective.
Yeah.
So you want to find someone who's kind of applied for a lot of jobs, not just applied, actually. I would find someone who has hired a lot of people because it's different what they are looking for.
100%.
You know what they're looking for, right?
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, job interviews, like mock interviews or stuff like that. You can, if your program isn't doing it, you can find ways to do it. I think we're on our last story.
Okay.
So this,
I think it's a good one to end on.
It is. It's an anonymous story. Is there anything you wish you knew or some tips for others transitioning to practice?
Ooh.
There are so many ways to be a great AT. Everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. I came from a program that was very strict in terms of athlete-AT relationships, and we were watched super closely with how we interacted with our teams we worked with. It was a very stressful environment where not everyone was able to be themselves. I immediately felt more comfortable when I became certified and working my first job. I do understand students need to have supervision and guidance, but I think some of the supervision came off more like smothering our individuality. We all need to learn the same skills and have core knowledge base, but our soft skills and personalities are really what make you thrive as an AT. And I think now that I practice on my own, it is one of my strengths that I'm easily able to build long-lasting relationships with my student-athletes where we laugh, joke, and enjoy our time together.
Yeah, I feel that.
So I think basically it's the soft skills that she's talking about. No, keep going.
I was just going to say, I mean, that's true. That's, again, it goes back to the art of being an athletic trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think that's the one of the things, those quote-unquote soft skills that people kind of tend to overlook.
And again, it's like something that's a little bit hard to teach.
Yeah, it is.
But something that you can observe.
Yeah, for sure.
So we do have, like I talked about before, best parts about being a certified and best parts about being a student. Or like what you miss, like what certifieds miss about being a student. I think that's something that we should highlight because I feel like when you're in a student and in the grind, it's kind of like, so we are going to put that up in our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/AT Corner Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also put up some things that students submitted that they are scared about to transition to practice.
Interesting.
And maybe in the comments we can address some of them and how.
Ooh.
So if you see something that people are scared about transitioning to practice, I'm only going to pick out a few, then we can maybe try to address those in the comments. I think that'd be helpful.
Nice. Yeah.
And then we have some exciting announcements, I think, coming out tomorrow on our Instagram. So make sure you follow at AT Corner Podcast. It is a CEU announcement, so check that out. We are doing every other episode as education or stories. This one was a story episode. Next week is going back to our education. I think we have one from last summer from
our Houston trip.
From Sports Medicine Broadcast and Memorial Hermann update. Sports Memorial Hermann.
Each time I think of that conference, that was fun.
It was really fun.
It was a good time.
It was a good time. So yeah, I think the biggest thing is just make sure that you have mentors and try to find what works best for you, not what works best for everyone else.
And it gets easier.
It does.
It gets easier.
Yeah. It's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Clinical bottom line.
There you go.
You got anything else, Randy?
Nope, that's perfect. Thank you for helping us showcase athletic training behind the tape. Bye.